willkommen zu unserem IT Agile Podcast. Wir freuen uns sehr, dass du eingeschaltet hast. In unserem Podcast dreht sich heute alles um die spannende Welt der agilen Methoden und IT-Innovationen. Hier bieten wir tiefgehende Einblicke, inspirierende Gespräche und praktische Tipps rund um die Themen Agilität, Scrum und moderne Organisationsentwicklung. Ich bin dein heutiger Gastgeber Benjamin Igner und wir haben eine besondere Folge für dich vorbereitet, die ausnahmsweise mal auf Englisch stattfindet. Unsere Gäste sind Alexei und Roland, die gemeinsam die innovative Methode Org Topologies entwickelt haben. Diese Methode unterstützt Unternehmen dabei, ihre Strukturen und Arbeitsweisen effektiv zu gestalten. Also lehn dich zurück und lass dich von ihren Erkenntnissen inspirieren und erfahre, wie auch du deine Organisation auf das nächste Level heben kannst. Let's go!
It's starting. So, let's start with our recording. Roland, since you asked me to do something before we start, I should just tell everyone how great you guys are, how great Roland is, how great Alexei is. I should mention this about 5 times. That was written down in the contract that was presented me by the Russian mafia that visited my house before we started. And very glad that I've got this opportunity once in a lifetime to be with you guys on this podcast. So let's jump right into it.
Thanks for having
I've got one tick in the box, and it wasn't the Russian mafia. It was the European Broadcasting Association. Okay.
Ah, awesome. Yeah. Similar. Same.
Good morning.
All right. Hey, so before we dig into this crazy new thing that you guys started, can you give us a brief introduction of who you are and what you're doing?
What's your name and where you're from?
Go ahead.
Me, yeah. Okay, so hi, I'm Alexei, and I'm a partner with Roland on this thing we call Org Topologies. We have a pretty similar backgrounds, which is sometimes positive and sometimes is not, because we are biased basically with the same things. So we are biased with software and product development. We are biased and anchored with Scrum and team-based approaches. And we anchored to believe that organizations essentially need more adaptability. Even if they don't think they need more, they would eventually benefit from more adaptability or adaptivity. Because essentially that's the way how to stay relevant to the customers and stakeholders for as long as it takes. So we entered the field as software developers, both of us, and then we met Scrum along the way. We, as we say, usually we go to different churches, but we pray to the same God. I'm a Scrum trainer with the Scrum Alliance, and Roland is a trainer with the Scrum Org. But we share the same values and the same principles and the same ideas and understanding how you would go about scale and descaling complexity of organizations. And that's where we met in our journeys and started to essentially compare a lot of clients and companies that we work with and we work for. And that's how we discovered, not really invented, but discovered the org topologies as a way to classify, describe, compare, and actually work with different organizational designs.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah.
What about you, Roland?
I'm Roland from Holland, to avoid any confusion. I live in Utrecht. Two kids, grown up, left the house. 2 cats, still here, and a wife. Working on org topologies with Alexei. We have a reinforcing loop, right? Like Alexei said, we sort of have the same biases, which is not always handy. But on the other hand, this is, shared interests and the same kind of focus did bring us to discover org topologies. What we did actually is see what everybody sees, but we thought about it a lot. We talked about it a lot, and we gave it some time to crystallize. To really find out what is it that makes things work the way they work or not work the way they work in product development in organizations. Because we think it's a bit of a, it can use some improvements. Let me put it that way.
And I think we found out that we share the same observations on where the industry currently is and the problem that a lot of companies have. And if you're interested, Benjamin, we can share with you these problems that we encountered.
Sure, go ahead. I would be curious to hear from you what you think the issues in the current industries are.
Yeah, so I'm actually around trying to find this list of things that we generated last time. It's not for the recording. So we're writing a book on octopologies, and that's one of the draft chapters that we're currently working on. So one systemic impediment that we see a lot of organizations are actually experiencing is, we call it autonomitis blockados. It's a sickness where basically companies have invested a lot in making teams autonomous. Autonomitis, autonomititis, it's a sickness, right? It's a disease. Everybody pays too much attention to creating autonomous, independent teams. But it is blockados, meaning that essentially at some level, there are still a lot of bad blocking dependencies because the teams have narrow scope of ownership. They are autonomous, but only within their narrow value stream, their narrow thing they're owning, maybe a component, maybe a feature set, maybe a macro service, maybe a part of the product. But from the customer perspective and from a stakeholder perspective, those internal barriers are artificial. You know, like a customer journey usually cuts through all the internal boundaries. And that's why when, for example, a stakeholder wants teams to work on increasing retention, this goal to increase retention cannot be put in any team's backlog. And that's why...
Can you give us a brief example of a company where you have seen this to make it a little bit more handy?
Oh, it's actually, that's 95% of the companies we see these days. And I think this is true for the entire industry, not for the small selection of our clients. That's where you, as a company, thought the Agile and Scrum ideas are team-level ideas. And you've created Scrum teams, a lot of so-called independent Scrum teams with independent backlogs and team-level product owners, so-called product owners. And they kind of in isolation look they look in isolation pretty much agile and flexible and fast, but the whole company is still slow because you've optimized the parts of the system, not the whole system. So the broader value streams from the customer and stakeholder perspective, they are still super blocked and super slow.
On the other hand, we've seen so many different approaches on how to tackle this problem. So there is SAFe out there claiming to make businesses agile. There is less scaling frameworks. There is flight levels.
Yeah, but maybe
don't
that's...
Don't these things work?
Well, maybe that's also a disease, an organizational disease. You know, we could call that compulsive framework addiction. What's a difficult word? Maybe scaliosis would be a good sickness name. It's like, yeah, we have these agile teams because there was this compulsive need to have agile teams, and now all of a sudden we need to make them collaborate, and oh gosh, we have a problem because everybody's just stuck up in dependencies. So what do? You know, you need an instant solution framework. So this is what we call unthoughtful org design. So I was approached by a company just this week, Scrum Masters. They want me to talk about team topologies. Why do they want this? Well, actually, in the back of their minds, you know, they need to know about this because the managers already decided they need team topologies for whatever reason. We don't know. And now they need to learn about it, but maybe they're too lazy to read the book, so they want somebody to explain to them what team topologies is all about. There is no real thinking about what the problem is that we're really trying to solve. We just take the next framework that is up and hip and happening, and that's it. One size fits all. It will solve our problem.
Yeah.
This is not a good habit, right? We try to fight this with thoughtful org design.
Or systemic org design. And these two diseases, they are not systemic, right? And there is this law of systems thinking saying that today's problems are yesterday's solutions, which means that, well, if you try to make your teams as much as autonomous as you want and you call them independent autonomous squads, right? You're solving some problem, but you're creating another problem at another bigger level. And that problem is that now these teams being so-called independent, in quotes, they're completely misaligned, And now you need to add some extra structures, extra processes to help them with alignment. And SAFe would be one way to align dependent teams. And it's not right or wrong, but it's a solution that you need because you already created this problem of misalignment, right? And flight levels, I don't have a lot of experience with that yet, but it's also a way to align on things at different level. And these are not right or wrong solutions, but we need to understand we need those things because we have created, we have planted the cactuses we're currently sitting on, as they say.
And, you know? And just to play a little devil's advocate here, and now sure. You're coming along saying, hey, try out Arctopologies, that's a new thing. Or yeah, how is it different from your perspective?
Not really. We're not saying Arctopologies.
First of all, this is not a framework, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
We just want people to start thinking again. That's what we say. You know, use your brain capacity and think about real problems that you have and try to find the next best solution with the least, you know, damage. Instead of simply not thinking and adopting something and not overseeing some framework and not overseeing the negative consequences of that org design.
So how would you go along? Like, what would the first steps be? I can't really imagine just saying, okay, go into brain on mode and everything will work out, right? You have to have some ideas, concepts, boundaries on the side. Can you walk us briefly through, like, if a client would approach you, and let's say they're asking for, we need more alignment within our project portfolio organization or IT department or whatever, right? And what would the next steps be in order for them to really succeed at their job?
Yeah, so the question would be actually where the misalignment is coming from, right? Because like if you imagine a very small company of five people, like a startup era of a company, there is enough alignment with any additional structures. So something happened in this company along the way that now the people are misaligned. And it's not about org topologies. It's about really trying to understand the deeper root causes, if you will, or some negative dynamics that happen within the organization. And org topologies just come here as a technique to foster or facilitate these discussions to happen. What you can do with org topologies, you can lay down on the table like a big map, and you will try to circle which different archetypes, these are building blocks of your organization, which different archetypes do you have in your organization? And this map essentially consists of two dimensions. One dimension is how well your teams are at doing what they are supposed to do. So like from not able to deliver anything end-to-end to being super like DevOps teams in a good sense of this word, where they can actually do things end-to-end, build it and run it and everything. But that's another. This is just one dimension, right? And not every company is already at the end of this scale. A lot of companies are still on a journey of trying to, you know, help the teams own infrastructure and build end-to-end things. But there's another dimension which a lot of companies forget about when they focus too much on the teams. This is the dimension of what the teams are owning and what the teams are taking care of. And the lowest part of this would be a team's own some very small technical parts of the product, like maybe components. And they need to be given tasks because they don't understand customer, they don't speak customer language. Like if I'm owning a search functionality on that website and my job as a team to run the search to make sure we have the best search, I don't really understand retention. Somebody needs to digest this for me and help me understand what do I need to do in search in order for retention to be, you know, improved. So these low-level teams, which can be super advanced in terms of their end-to-end engineering capabilities, they still can be pretty low on understanding customer domain. So this is another vertical dimension that we have on the map. This is exactly this customer domain or scope of work, as we call it. And coming back to your question, where we start, we lay down this map and we go and we study every team. or we invite team members into this workshop. And then we circle and map, assess all the team types that we have in the company. And there, the more low-level archetypes you have, the more sources of misalignment you actually have. So this will become hopefully obvious that the need for alignment is caused by misalignment, and misalignment is caused by, well, every team just owning and seeing a little piece of the puzzle. Nobody is actually from the teams are able to see the big picture.
So mapping with management and people from the teams in one room, and mapping a department or a business line, maybe the whole company is too big. You know, if you're talking about a 4,000 people bank, that's too big. But mapping, you know, an area of the company where the problems are might reveal to management and to the people, wow, actually, we are all working asynchronously, trying to juggle the work and creating some value ultimately for the customer, which is a very complex way of creating value. What alternatives do we have? Now you come to next step. This map shows you all the other archetypes that are there. There are 16 archetypes. So it also shows you, let's say, higher levels of collaboration where maybe, you know, and that's for the team to explore, maybe there's a better place to be with less chances of having misalignment.
When you're mapping an organization or part of an organization, at what type of information would you display, or how would you find out where the issues are and where they need to be changed, where things need to be changed? What are you looking for when you look at a map of a company or a department?
I think key, it's of course the building blocks. What we're trying to deliver value, and which organizational elements do we need, people, teams, departments, to be able to have a complete ecosystem of value delivery. Now, the first question that comes up when you try to make that visual is, what is value? So basically, we need to understand what it is that we're trying to create as a group. And yeah, Alexei?
Yes, and very important aspect that is somehow so obvious, and that's why it's so often forgotten in the so-called agile adoption, is who is the customer?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
What we see happening these days is this substitution of the term customer. And like for some teams, and we just work with an infrastructure department of some large company, for them, the customer is just other teams. They need to build something on top of the infrastructure. But I understand where this is coming from, and I understand this level of abstractions, but we need to remember the real paying customer. So this whole exercise starts with actually looking at your organization from the outside, with the eyes of the real paying customer, and asking, if you would ask a customer what the value of the company is, what would they say? What would they think your product is? Because it's so easy to get locked into your internal small understanding of value and products. Like an iOS team, I work a lot with mobile developers, like iOS team might think an iOS app is a product. But it's easy to prove otherwise. Just go to their airplane mode and try to do something with the app. And the app says no connection to the server, because the server is also part of the solution. So the customer product or a business product, the outside view product, is not just an app. It's the app plus all the backend, like in the bank, that needs, you know, to be activated to show you a list of your transactions. But it's so easy to believe, being a member of an iOS team with an iOS product owner, an iOS backlog, an iOS roadmap, everything, that iOS app is a product, but it's not. So the first, like the step zero of applying octopologies, is actually trying to remember who is that paying customer that actually that business was meant to be organized for in the first place. And then when you do this mapping of the teams, essentially it will show you the distance from the teams to the customer. And the farther out your teams away from the customer, the more translators, interpreters, coordinators you will need in the company to actually translate from customer value to some kind of internal work that needs to be done.
Yeah, so a concrete example would be that maybe we have a web shop and the customer wants to order building material in our web shop. So that would be the outside-in definition for the customer. You know, they just need their building material to be shipped and sent to their homes, to their work. Internally, we might be talking to this search team, you know, or the iOS team or the whatever. And they also think they're working on a product, but that would be more likely to see as a component if you compare it to how the customer perceives the product. So this is what we call the product gap. And once the product gap is becoming more clear, we can start to see the room for improvement, actually. The closer we can move the work that the teams do to be closer to the customer, the more comprehensible the work will be on their product backlog, as in customer needs that will be defined in that customer backlog. And, you know, the lower the level of misalignment will be, because everybody will be thinking in customer problems, not in search tasks.
And just to finish where we started, like this problem with misalignment, right? Now, at least you will see where this is coming from, because the teams cannot speak the customer language. They don't understand broader definition of product. They are working in isolation. These are, you know, a source of a lot of misunderstandings and misalignment. Now you understand where you are. And now the next question is, okay, what do you want to do with this, right? And there's no right or wrong solution. If you still would like to amplify the teams being autonomous, there's nothing wrong with that. But at least now you understand the price you're paying for that. So the price for having a lot of independent teams with a lot of narrow focus is that you need to add things on top, like safe, or whatever, right, to help them discuss the dependencies and have these extra alignment meetings. It's fine if it is what you wanted to get, but we call orctopologists systemic thoughtful org design versus organic org design, because a lot of managers who we call org designers, essentially everybody who influences organization is an org designer, these people might not have enough skills to actually connect the dots. And that's why they might not see the sources of the problem, and they might actually substitute one optimizing goal for the other. They might believe that fast teams with a narrow ownership are great, but actually maybe it's not actually what the business really needs. Maybe business actually needs more real business agility, adaptability. And if you would like to increase more adaptability and business agility in your organization, you need to stop at some point focusing too much on how autonomous the teams are and start investing in collaboration of the teams, and co-ownership.
I think you have a good point in here, because I'm seeing the same patterns that you're describing. And just to wrap my head around what orctopologies is, because I think it would be super helpful to have like a picture at hand, which we're going to have. If you're listening to this, just check out our LinkedIn page, and we're going to have a blog post with pictures that might help you understand. So if you want, you can pause and just go over there and take a look at that. There will be a link in the show notes, I hope, at least. We're going to find out. However, just to wrap my head around it, so orctopologies is basically a type of paint box that I could use to map out my organization and identify ways to evolutionarily improve my organizational structure. Yes. By taking ownership of the current design and the goals that I'm having with this part of the organization.
Yes. In a nutshell, that's what it is. So this map is 4x4. Showing 16 organizational archetypes, building blocks, individuals doing tasks, teams doing features, teams of teams working on customer problems. You know, it's different elements that I'm just picking out of these 16. And by looking at your real
organization the way it is, you can draw in like, oh, I have five of these, I have two of these, I have a lot of this, you know, I got coordinators. So you can really map it and see the complexity. Now, once you mapped those organizational elements, we have a bias to thinking that adaptability for an organization is actually relevant for all organizations, for all companies, because you need to produce value to your customers to stay relevant in the long run. So although maybe you're focusing on satisfying shareholders and whatever requirements that you have, you cannot do that without also selling value to the product, to the customer, okay? And in order to be still relevant, you need to maybe pivot every once in a while, pick up new stuff because there's people entering your market that otherwise will take it from you. So adaptability is important. So we map all these elements that you have, and you can draw your configuration on this 4x4 to, well, the upper right corner would be everything sits there and it's perfectly adaptive, but it's not. It probably never is because it's a perfection goal. So this gives you an indication of what you can start merging in your organization to create more cohesion, to create more collaboration between elements that are now separated from each other. And each step that you take will involve a couple of those organizational elements that you need to take along in the storyline of merging and starting to collaborate. So it's like a blueprint of impediments that you need to solve, like siloed ownership and all that. So the map,
to summarize what Roland has just said, it's a map, but the focus is not on the map. There's also a mapping technique, how you can assess your current organization or part of an organization. But assessment is just one step in the whole process. So it's org topologies is a map, is a mapping, and it's a method how eventually to use your better improved understanding of your value creating ecosystem to move it in some other place, but more thoughtfully. Maybe you would realize you would like to actually invest more in end-to-endness of teams. Good. We have ideas how to do this. Maybe you would like to add more adaptability and more shared ownership to the teams. We have ideas and experiments that you might want to try how to go there. So it's a map, it's a mapping technique, and it's a method how to move from one place to the other.
You know, the more I hear you guys talking about it, the more I really, really like it. Because what I've seen from my past almost 9 years of experience as an agile coach and transformational advisor to companies is that many organizations rely on frameworks, blueprints, ideas, and concepts, and not really taking ownership of the design and adaptation of those concepts into their organization. And when they do, we see great success. Like, if you look at the case studies at John Deere 1919 and 2020, when they started with SAFe, moved into scaled agile, and then really tried to figure out what they wanted out of this transformation, and then created their own structure, so to say, their own framework, and they really took ownership about it. That's when their stock price went up, their lead times went down, their project costs went down. They just had major improvements. And the main thing that we also learned from things like the Spotify model is they took ownership of their issues and created something that works for them.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And that was the main learning of it. Not how they structured, not how they did it, but that they did take the ownership and created something that works in their context.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I really like the idea that you're proposing here.
Yeah, essentially, by using org topologies, you stop being dependent on frameworks or copy-paste ideas. You can become your own Spotify, you know, if you know what I mean. You now will have methods and ideas how to create, how to design your own framework. You can also use whichever frameworks you like, which are there, out there, right? It's not about reinventing everything within, but now you are at a better place to see that framework is not a goal. The framework is a vehicle which can take you from one place to the other. And if during the transformation, you can actually have, you know, a regular snapshot, a regular assessments of where you are using org topologies mapping. And then if you see that this chosen framework is not taking you where you want to be, well, you can just drop it essentially and change it, adopt it. You know, now you're the owner and you are driving the car, not the, you know, you're not just inside a framework train, which is taking you somewhere. You're now the owner. So the ownership of org change, it's super essential. And there are some studies out there which say that actually it's the biggest contributor to success or failure is how much or less ownership of change there is within a company. So we want people to understand how the company works now, how it is currently structured and why, and have them have, you know, better discussions on what they want to be when they grow up as an organization, kind of.
You know, you were just talking about John Deere, Benjamin, and which is a very big company. So, you know, to do a transformation or a change in such company is not going to be one thing for the whole company that has been implemented overnight.
Sure.
What we think is much more valuable for a company is to maybe try to challenge their own beliefs by doing small experiments. You can do this by mapping and then deciding, oh, maybe we should try a little bit more going up. And how could we try to do this? Well, maybe we can work on a joint initiative with a couple of teams and see how that works if they collaborate together on solving this bigger problem. And then take the learnings from that. You know, so it's just trying it. And maybe people are going to say within John Deere, wow, man, more than 10 people working together on one idea, that's not going to work. That's horrible. It's going to, you know, it's going to be chaos. But we offer the opportunity to control an experiment, try. You know, and if it really works, you know, then try and maybe do it in more places. And then you can keep on monitoring your progress and discovering what's good for you in your company.
Sounds awesome. I really hate to do this because I feel like we could go on for hours and talking about this. So I'm looking at the timing and we're a little bit over half an hour in. So if people want to like to learn more about this and continue the conversation, where can people find you? Where can we go on with this?
We are very bad at keeping information to ourselves. So if you just go to our website, which is octopologist.com, you'll find a lot of material out there. There are a lot of blog posts that we've written over the years where we actually analyze, assess different frameworks, so you actually can see the limitations and the possibilities of all the known frameworks, and you can download the primer from our site and actually use these ideas for free. There's also a video course online on the website if you would like to go deeper. There's a 4.5 hours of us talking and with video and with slides, with exercises and questions where you can actually take this course and start practicing octopologies. And if this is not enough, you can attend our super practical two-day course where we actually teach maybe like 20% of the time, but the other 80% is spent on participants actually analyzing their org design. So we're asking every participant to come with a company in the mind or a part of a company, and we're taking them through steps of analyzing that organization, and then by the end of the second day they end up having a clear picture of how to change, how to improve, what would be the target picture and the next first steps. So essentially after attending these 2 days, you can come to a company and rerun the same workshop now with your people and embark on a journey of thoughtful org development.
What I've learned, and I think Alexei will agree with that, is that, our training is super practical. We have deep discussions about beliefs and you know, fixed mindsets that are in companies, how difficult it is to engage in a real change that moves upward on our map. And therefore, I've seen such good results of people joining the training in pairs or in triplets from one company, because that gives much richer discussions. For instance, a consultant or an agile coach plus a manager, if they work on their org design together, you know, and we can have discussions in the group, and we have all this information from two sides of the coin from the problem in one company, that's super valuable.
Awesome. Hey, thank you both so much for jumping on this podcast. At IT Agile, we really like what you guys are doing and the contribution that you're giving back to the community. Also by pushing forward and keeping companies responsible for owning their way of working. We really like this. We're looking forward to have a collaboration with you guys and hope we can bring this within our portfolio and to the German-speaking audience in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. So stay tuned and watch out on our website and social media. I'm sure everyone will find you guys on LinkedIn as well. And yeah, thank you so much for jumping on an episode with me and see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for having us.